Today I'm mixing things up a bit. I've got an interview that I did with Samantha Nolan-Smith from about 15 months ago when I'd just been through my big breakdown, and I felt called to share it here. It used to be on Sam Nolan-Smith's podcast, Change the Game, but that's no longer out there. And I really wanted to share this conversation. I didn't really know why. Anyway, I went through and edited it, and I think it's because it's actually a message that I need to hear myself. And whenever I need to hear something myself, I'm pretty positive you guys need to hear it too. So this is all about surrender. It's all about allowing. It's all about trust. And we always need to be reminded of this because it is a practice. Before we dive in, I thought I'd get Sam Nolan-Smith on because she's part of a wonderful initiative called Australian Women's Day. There's a Kickstarter running right now. So welcome, Sam, and tell us a bit about Australian Women's Day.
Yeah, sure. For the last couple of years, I've been building out the School of Visibility and continue to do so. And part of doing that really is about looking at all the different ways that I can support women to be more visible, to speak up, be seen and heard in the world. And as I was, you know, a lot of my work is inner work. It's about, well, what are the internal blocks to being seen and heard in the world? And I was starting to get the feeling like there's more to this, than just the inner work. Although I still am deeply passionate about the inner work, will always be passionate about women doing that. And around that time of feeling really frustrated, Nicole Rowan Holt came and approached me, and she said, spoke to me about a bunch of stuff. But one of the things she said is, what do you think about starting up Australian Women's Day? And I was an immediate yes to that, because to me, that was the next step for me in women's visibility. It was providing a platform. It was providing a day as a catalyst to then have this ongoing conversation amongst Australian women about who we are, where we want to take this country, really encouraging women to feel, to really appreciate their role as leaders in this nation and their ability to create change when we all come together, when we all band together. So to me, that's what, that came at the perfect time. It was like, yes, absolutely. This is what I feel deeply passionate about creating. And the other thing about Australian Women's Day is we don't celebrate ourselves anywhere near enough. Like, there are so many women that we know, Cully, that, you know, we're juggling a million things. We're just like weighed down by the weight of responsibility of, you know, parenthood, running businesses, just trying to keep friendships afloat, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what happens is we end up always putting our achievements and just the incredible way in which women actually manage to keep the juggle happening, to me, requires celebration instead of always just accepting that that's just the norm or assuming that that's just what women do. I think that, it's time that we actually said, look at everything that Australian women are doing in this country. Let's celebrate each other, but also let's find out where this is really causing massive amounts of stress for women, and let's talk about how we can change that. So that's kind of the underpinning to Australian Women's Day. And we've been working on that since earlier in the year, and our first one kicks off on the 22nd of September of this year, and then we're sort of building it out from there. As with anything that's new, we're just kind of getting as many of the pieces together as we possibly can for this year, with the idea that, you know, we build out and build out and build out from there. So lots of fast action has been taken, and there's much more to come.
Because, like, when we were talking about Australian Women's Day, one of the things that we were both kind of speaking to each other about was this idea that there's not that many Australian women's voices out there. You know, it's like we're always looking to America for, like, our, I don't know, our inspiration, when there's so much brilliance here, You know, that's definitely over the last few years of knowing you through the online circles that we kind of operate in. It's like there are so many incredible women out there doing Australian women doing incredible things in this world and not necessarily receiving the recognition that they deserve for all the things that they're doing, because instead we're going and consuming all our content and all our learning and all that kind of jazz from, you know, from the great United States.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't have the culture that says it's okay to shine. It's okay to really celebrate what you do. And, you know, when if you've been to America, those who are listening have been to America, you'll know it's the complete opposite in America. You go there and you are encouraged to step forward. You're expected to step forward, actually. So if you don't feel comfortable with that, that's a whole nother, that's a whole nother thing for you. But in Australia, we don't have that. And often when I see, even I notice this in myself, when I see these incredible initiatives going on that are global initiatives, and then I find out it's an Australian that's behind it, I'm always a bit like, oh, isn't that amazing? But I'm surprised rather than assuming that it's an Australian behind it. And part of Australian Women's Day is changing that mindset, the mindset that says all the genius, all the incredible stuff, all the great entertainment, all the world leading initiatives and projects are happening elsewhere. And it's time, I really believe it's time for us to bring that home. And one of the things that some women have been saying to us about Australian Women's Day is, oh, well, we've already got Women's Day. We've got International Women's Day. And yes, of course we have International Women's Day. And I think that's a hugely important day. And I'm 100% behind it. And I don't see that as a catalyst for the kind of thing we've just been talking about. I don't see that that's the catalyst for Australian women to say, oh, we can be leaders on the world stage. Oh, we can be, what does it mean to us to be Australian women? And what are the things that are holding us back from really stepping forward in the way that we're talking about and saying, well, of course we would be global leaders in this area or that area or that area. And so for me, that's another really core driver for Australian Women's Day.
Yeah, because I feel like I just wrote down the words identity, because it's like, I feel like as Australians, we, you know, I don't know, I still feel like we're kind of this, almost like this new little infancy country that's still kind of finding its feet. And we don't necessarily have this really strong sense of identity. And the identity that we had, we feel a little bit ashamed of, to be honest.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, the irony of it is, of course, we're the oldest country. We've got the oldest living continuous culture in the world. Yeah. And we have no integration of our stories. And this is something I've been passionate about for a long time. I used to work with Aboriginal communities before I moved into the online space. And something I used to speak about a lot there with my colleagues was, how do we integrate our stories? How do we get a truly Australian story as opposed to a story of the British, which, you know, coming here and then a complete whitewash, literally, of the country in every way and pretending like this isn't this new country, this new community that was built wasn't built on a huge amount of violence and wasn't built on massacres and wasn't built on genocide and all of this stuff that is hanging there anyway in the consciousness. People feel it, but they don't want to look at it. And I get why they don't want to look at it. It's horrific. It's very shameful. And I understand that. And I don't think we can grow as a nation until we're willing to be truthful about that and just sit within the discomfort of that and come together. Particularly, I think women can really lead this, of coming together in a really genuine way and really open way and recognizing that we have to sit in the truth of that. We have other really uncomfortable truths about this nation, like the way we're currently treating refugees is absolutely just appalling. And many other things about, you know, we had a prime minister who used to always talk about us being the most successful multicultural nation in the world. And I'm sure that's an aspiration we would all aspire to, but I'm not 100% sure that we're there.
Yeah.
To be quite frank.
No, well, I was just actually thinking when I was thinking about, like, you know, that we have this identity that maybe we're not all that enamored with. And there's definitely that element of how we came to be here. But there's also, if I think about when I felt like Australia had more of an identity, it was during the 80s, you know, when we won the America's Cup. And, you know, and it was like men at work and very like men wearing really short shorts and singlets and having beer guts. And like it was, and not much respect for women and, you know, like drinking and spewing and like that is kind of our identity in like the modern age. But even then it's just like white men, yes. Mostly drunk, yeah. Probably yeah. Beating their wives. Like, that's something to be proud of.
And watching sport.
Yeah, exactly.
And watching other men playing sport.
So it's definitely time for a new narrative, right?
It is. Oh, my goodness. Some of it's funny. Some of it's just really not funny.
Well, some of it's just, like, cringeworthy. But, like, what can you do? You have to – you almost have to laugh or you cry. So
Exactly. Yeah, and exactly what you said, Cully, is it's time for a new narrative. And that's what really – you know, there are many women – in Australia who are contributing to that, and we want to feature them, and we love some of the podcasts that are coming out, we love some of the books that are coming out, and we just want one place where you can go at any time and just feel inspired by the women of this nation. Just feel like, holy shit, we do some incredible stuff here. Because when every woman in the country feels like that, can you imagine what we'll be capable of?
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool. Sweet. So how can people get involved?
Yeah, so, you know, there's many ways you can get involved. On the day, there'll be an online festival, so you can tune in at AustralianWomen'sDay.com, and there'll be stories around the clock from, you know, women that we're featuring. That'll grow out over the years. Like, it'll get more and more sophisticated, let's say, and more like a TV program. So there'll be that way. There'll be that. Very soon on our website, AustralianWomen'sDay.com, there'll be featured events that you can come to. So you'll be able to check out, are there any in my area that you might want to get involved in? There's an official event, an opening event in Melbourne. And again, you'll be able to buy tickets to that very soon. And then we have a, you know, plan your day, where we've got loads and loads of like 30 odd suggestions about how you might want to create your own event or do your own small thing. It doesn't have to be this enormous thing. It might be just hang out with your girlfriends for the afternoon and do whatever it is that you love to do together. And then the other thing that we're doing at the moment is obviously putting on, creating, and then supporting a national day takes a huge amount of effort. There's loads of volunteers involved. Every single person who's been involved so far has volunteered 100% of their time, because there is no money behind this aside from some personal money that Nicole and I've put in. And we're not trust fund kids, and we're not, you know, we don't have cash.
I hear you, sister.
So we're just scraping that together best we can. And so we started a Kickstarter campaign to really see if we could get the women of Australia to support this and to get behind it, where we could collectively say, yeah, we care about this enough that, you know, I'll chuck in $10, I'll chuck in $20, whatever it is. So that's finishing on Saturday of this week. And obviously, you know, people said, why don't you go for government grants? Why don't you go for sponsorship? And we will definitely pursue those things, because we'll have to, because, you know, we just won't be able to sustain it if we don't have multiple revenue streams coming in. And I feel very passionately, having worked particularly with Aboriginal communities for so long, as I did in the past, I watched incredibly important initiatives get cut through government funding. Like, I saw ATSIC completely get demolished, and that hit home really strongly for me. And then I saw lots of small NGOs lose their funding every time government would change. And I'm pretty determined never to let that happen to Australian Women's Day. So, you know, yeah, we'll definitely try. We'll be, you know, applying for grants and stuff, but I would much prefer the women of Australia to band together and say, actually, we can do this ourselves. So that's what the Kickstarter is about. It's only on for a few more days. But if you go to either AustralianWomen'sDay.com, you'll see there's a banner there saying support, you know, support the Kickstarter. That will take you there. Or if you went straight to Kickstarter.com and typed in Australian Women's Day, you would find it as well.
Cool. I'll stick some notes, some links in the show notes too. Well, that's all very exciting. So speaking of new narratives and old narratives, now we're going to dive into, I guess, what's an old narrative for me, because things have shifted even further since we had that conversation, obviously. And so I just really hope you guys enjoy the next little while chatting with Sam, chatting with me about my journey, which finished about a year ago. And taking, I guess, a reflective step back through my own story. Yeah, go and support Australians Women's Day. Throw them a few bucks. Get involved if you can. Have your own event. And, yeah, anything else you want to add?
No. All thanks, good. Carly.
No worries.
Go support Australian women.
Welcome to Carlosophies. I'm Carly Nimmo. And to be honest, I'm still figuring out this thing called life. This podcast has been a training ground for me to learn to show up and speak up. It's grown and changed as I've grown and changed. And these days, I want to explore what happens when you let the lid off. When you stop living a life of expectation and start living a life in brilliant technicolor. Each week, I'll show up and peel back another layer of the stories that make up the fabric of who I am. And occasionally, I'll dive deep with a guest into a topic that's piqued my curiosity. So show up and allow Carlosophies to speak to you in any way you need it to.
Tell everybody that. So there's a lot to this, right? But I'll start at the beginning. So my primary business is working as a voiceover artist, and I run a voiceover agency called Killer Copy. So we do voiceovers for learning programs, primarily a bit of TV and radio, but and phone systems and stuff like that. But the bulk of my work is working with really large corporates on voices for learning. So that business has been going since, I think, 2004 or five. So a long time now. It was a really organic kind of growth business. And it's led me to, you know, there were times where I was working 15, 16 hours a day. I left them a very long time ago, embraced systems and procedures, though it's against my natural nature. I've definitely been someone who's grown into that side of business. So that it allowed me to free up time and space to do lots of other things that I'm passionate about. So I run a podcasting school called Radcasters after starting my own podcast and people going, how do I start a podcast that sounds as good as yours? So my podcast is called Carlosophies. I have a podcasting school called Radcasters. I do a bit of business mentoring, run a mastermind with my best mate, Lisa Corduff, and run retreats, and I'm writing a book, and none of it is overwhelming, even though I'm also doing it around my three-year-old. You know, it's so weird, right, because it feels like I say all that and I'm like, oh, my God, I feel exhausted just listening to it. But it's so not exhausting. It's all stuff that just energizes me and I love it. So,
that's
the key, right?
That's what I do.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think we all have these ideas of how a business should run and how it should look and what we should be doing in it. And I find attachment is just such a hideous thief of joy. And so for me, the last decade has really been about figuring out who I am and what I'm passionate about and what was my purpose and all this kind of jazz. And kind of by numerous breakdowns, really, I've managed to let go of the attachment of needing to be anything else or needing to be anywhere else and just really enjoying life moment by moment, which as a recovering perfectionist is a big thing, you know, just to be actually going with the flow. It's amazing.
You know what really strikes me about that is we can spend so much time thinking, I've got to get the business model exactly right, and then everything has to fit into that. And I know for myself, when I get a new idea come through, I'm trying to work out, well, how does that fit with all the other pieces? And what I love about what you've just said is, actually, maybe some of it doesn't, but how it all fits together is I'm in flow with it all. I feel in joy. It's giving me energy, and that's enough.
Totally. And I totally believe it is. Until very recently, say the last 6 weeks or so, in the previous 12 months to that were really hard for me. Like I just felt like I was trying everything to make Radcasters fly. So my podcasting school started off with a huge bang and it got immediate really great traction, and I had 100 people do the course in a matter of the first few months, and it was just amazing. And then it just died like a dead duck in the water. And I just tried everything I could to revive it. You know, it was, I just felt like, I just had this image pop into my head then of, you know, someone just lying there and me trying to resuscitate it, you know, like I'm really attached to needing to resuscitate this person. And that's what it felt like in that business. Like I was changing everything, the funnels, and I was writing the sales emails, and I was trying this way of launching and this way of launching, and then evergreen, and then back to launching, and then every month I'd launch. And, you know, and I just felt like it was constantly draining me, but I just couldn't let it go because it was a good idea. And it's still a great idea and it's still a great course. I just have a choice as to the energy that I put into it, you know. And while I'm in this frantic energy of this has to fly, it's not the same energy as a open receiving kind of energy, you know. It's like a seek kind of thing instead of just a sitting and allowing. So for the last, you know, I had two launches. My last two launches for Radcasters were absolute failures. I mean, I had zero sign-ups, so that's pretty much what I would consider a failed launch. And it was heartbreaking, and I took it all so personally, mainly because I've had a lot of history with failure, and often it does become very personal to me, and I'm sure we'll cover that a little later on. But it just felt so horrible, you know, just to have no one want to buy from me. Like, what's wrong with me? Why aren't people investing in me, you know? All that kind of stuff that comes up when we're doing something and it's not flying and we're questioning, oh God, am I doing the right thing? Is this even what I'm supposed to be doing? I suck. This sucks. You know, all that kind of jazz. And that goes through our minds. And yeah, I just one day about 6 weeks ago, actually it wasn't even 6 weeks. I think it was like 4 weeks, the 26th of May, which is the 26th of June today. I reached breaking point. I had just gone through another failed launch. No one signed up, and it wasn't even Radcasters. I'd launched this new thing, this new program that I was really excited about, and I had zero traction. And it just killed me. You know, I was just like, I'm going to go get a job because this is so freaking hard, and I just can't take any more personal rejection. Because I've done a lot of stuff, right, and none of it really has elevated me to the Oprah status that I kind of sought, you know. I call it all Oprah syndrome.
Yeah. There's a few of us with Oprah syndrome.
Yeah. I want to be Oprah, but I'm just not willing to do the 50 years of work. I want it overnight. So, you know, just another thing hadn't happened for me, and my cash flow was just drying up, and I was just, and it had been 6 months of just really bad cash flow. And it all just took a toll, and it led me to the beach. I go to the beach pretty much every day. It's like my, you know, it's my, I don't know, solstice. It's the place that I go to calm down and plug back into something real, you know, and feel kind of insignificant. I don't know, it makes me feel like I'm part of something, but I don't have to control it. You know, it's just like the perfect analogy of
letting go, right? The beach, I mean, the sea moves with the tides and the, you know, and all of it happens effortlessly. And there I am drowning, you know, and I just love that because it's like, you know, just lie on your back and you'll be fine. So I'm walking on the beach and pretty much just crying. And I had threatened the universe that I would give up a number of times before this particular time, but this particular time I really meant it. You know, I have done, you know, I've been podcasting for over 2 years now. I've been showing up consistently and I just felt like nothing I was doing was getting me any further down wherever I thought I was meant to be. I don't know. So I seriously considered just getting a day job, and I was ready to. And so I walked on the beach and I just said, you know, I am done. And this time I'm serious. Like, I'm going home to look on Seek and I'm going to find a job. And for me, that's a big deal. Like, I haven't worked for someone else for what, like nearly, what is it, over 10 years, 12 years or something. And I never really had, you know, I'm university educated, but I did arts. So it's like probably
that counts, Carly.
Fryer at McDonald's might suit the bill. I don't really have like, an, you know, something to fall back on, or a trade. So it would have been stacking shelves. But the thing was, I was okay with that.
Mm.
I was okay. I just wanted the space, you know? So I came home and I had to jump on an interview and I was going to cancel, but I thought, no, I'll just do this. And then after that, Carlosophies will be finished and I'll move on with my new life, whatever that means. And I finished the interview and I opened my email and I had an email from Nova, as in the broadcasting, Australian broadcasting company that has a couple of number one rated shows across the country. And they were doing a podcast quest it was called. And it was looking to partner with other podcasters. And I had been named a top 10 finalist. And it was just so exciting because all I really wanted was a little bit of acknowledgement that I was on the right path.
So many times that's all we're looking for, isn't it? A few little breadcrumbs to keep us going.
I just wanted a breadcrumb. And this was it. This was like a whole loaf of bread for me. It was like, oh, my God, hallelujah, I have arrived. And I rang my mom and I told her and she said, Carly, this is so exciting. It's like you're almost an overnight success. And I love that because it's like my mum says, like, she's not like the most, not that she's dumb or anything, but she's not like the most profound woman. But some of the things she has said to me through my life have just been like, wow, mum, you didn't even mean that to be profound, but it's profoundly profound. Mm. Because, yes, you know, overnight success, that's what we're all going for. This is what this whole Oprah complex is about. And we see people having huge success. And what we don't see is the 40 years that led to that, and the heartache, and the falling on the knees at the beach, and the crying, and the, you know, and the letting go. And for me, this whole part of the letting go of needing it to be anything was actually just an acceptance that I was okay where I was, who I was, and with what I had.
Isn't that which key?
I'd never had that before. And I think the thing that what triggered that was I was walking with, do you know Kat LeBlanc?
Mm-hmm.
I know her. So we were walking through Melbourne. I went to Melbourne a couple of months ago to do some public speaking and we're walking through the streets and there were all these people. They had just shut down a couple of homeless tent cities in Melbourne at the time. And so the influx of people sleeping in doorways was like you couldn't not see it. And the weird thing was, and this is where the initial shift happened, I think, was I was walking along and I was looking at all these people asleep in the doorways. And I thought to myself, you know what? I would be okay. I would be okay. Like, if I had to sleep in a doorway, it might not be ideal, but I would be okay. You know, we are fully provided for, and the fact that we're not is just an illusion that we're subscribing to.
Isn't that a profound and exquisite realization that actually, despite everything that my mind might have been telling me, I am cared for. I am well cared for by the universe.
Absolutely. And then we lose the need.
Yes. And this is the thing that when you put neediness into like a launch, for example, people feel it. They smell it. They energetically, they don't even know why they're not responding to it. They're just like, for some reason, I'm not even going to check that email because they don't, the energy isn't there for them.
Yeah, totally. And through just dumping that needing for me to be anywhere else, needing for me to have anything else, needing to be anywhere else, it just really was like a weight lifted, you know? And I could just then do whatever the hell I wanted because I fully understood that I don't need to be Oprah. I mean, we have our own Oprah and she's very special and I love her to bits. I don't need to be Oprah.
Well, we've got one, right? As you say, exactly, we've already got an Oprah, so let's try and be ourselves, hey?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't need a big fancy house and I don't need a big fancy car and I don't need, you know, I don't need all this stuff. It's nice. Those are nice things to have for sure. And sometimes they might make your life a little easier or more enjoyable. But at a basic human, you know, needs level, we don't need that stuff. And it certainly is not a confirmation of our worthiness as a human being.
Worthiness of the work that you're putting into the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And therefore, I think it, for me anyway, it has always been really personal. Business has always been really personal. So, and it's so funny because it's like I had one of my podcast listeners had mentioned that she was, she was working in a job. She really wanted to start this passion project of hers, but she didn't want it to fail. And as someone who has been through failure more than one time, I think there were two elements to this. One was she was a super intelligent woman who had this amazing career. When you read the stuff that she's done, you know, she's working in project management and, just running huge businesses and scared shitless of running her own because it becomes personal for some reason, right? We end up attaching our worth to what we do in the world.
Absolutely.
And I'm not sure that's where our worth sits in what we do.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't. But it is so funny with some of the language that you used before. I thought, oh, that's so familiar. This language of, you know, nobody wants to buy from me. Why aren't people investing in me? This kind of thing, I think, rings through everybody's head. I'm not sure if it's gender specific, to be honest, because I spend so much time with female entrepreneurs. I don't know if men are telling themselves the same thing, but certainly women, we tend to, you know, pour our hearts and souls into our businesses and then definitely take it personally when people aren't responding. I certainly, with some of the male podcasters, for example, that I listen to in the entrepreneurial space, they seem to be approaching it very differently, which is just, I'm putting something out there. If it doesn't work, it's not about me. It's about, there's something I need to tweak in there. The system, or I need to tweak in the marketing or so forth. But we go, oh, that means that I am a failure or that people don't love me or somehow, you know, this incredibly personal, which then makes the journey of entrepreneurship horrifically hard some of the time. So now that you have had this breakthrough, let's call it, how does it feel on the other side of that? Where what's the attachment to success or failure? Let's just look at that for a minute.
Okay. All right. I love this. Okay. So before, you know, if I rewind 5 years, I had a co-working space and in Byron Bay. It was one of the it was the first regional co-working space in Australia. And I had big dreams. First thing, number one mistake of starting a business was because I really wanted to, I was lonely and I was isolated and I really wanted to belong somewhere. And so I thought, what better way than create a co-working space? Because then I will have to belong. People will be signing up to come to my place. So, you know, I will be like the leader. It'll be amazing. And that's my number one tip in business is never start a business to fulfill a need within you that is not being met.
Mm. Oh, such a good tip.
Because it can only lead to one place, and that is attachment, right? Big time attachment to it needing to work out. And for me, that, but also this, I find this really interesting because I've been looking at this week in terms of sometimes the thing that you want, and we put it out there to the universe and we're like, you know what? I want to feel like I belong. I want to feel like I'm part of something. I want to feel a sense of community. I want to feel really connected. That's what I wanted back then. So I went out and I started this co-working space and it all failed and it was a big, horrible, ugly mess. But what I ended up with was a sense of belonging, a sense of community and connection. It's just that I didn't control the way I got there, you know?
There's the biggie.
Yeah. So the thing is, so we go along this journey thinking, well, that's what I want, so I'm going after that. And the universe is throwing all this stuff at us to give us that. Yeah, we can't see it because we're so dog-eared determined to have it go this way. You know, this is the way it was going.
And we can only see the belonging if it looks like this particular package.
Yeah, and this is the path. This is the road that I have to take to get there.
Yeah.
And we don't choose the road, you know. Sometimes the road chooses us. So there's that element that I just wanted to kind of put there. Like, we can't really control where we're going. Not necessarily attached. We can know what we want, and then we really have to be okay with however we get there. And that's what shifted me, for me on the beach, all right, that day, was that I no longer wanted to control the way that I got there. I was just like, I want this, and I have done everything that I thought was required to get there, and now I'm done. So you take over from here. That's really what happened that day, right? So that's one side of it. The other side of the success failure thing is because since that office closed and I got so personally wrapped up in the failure that I was the failure, and I started Carlosophies to unpack that, really, to have discussions with other people about their fear and their failure and what they struggled with, because I felt really alone in it. Because we see so much that isn't the full story, right? It's like the iceberg. We're seeing what's on the top shiny bit, and then there's all this depth that we hardly see. And I want the depth in life, you know?
And, you know, Carly, I think that sometimes even when people share the depth, people miss it too. So I remember this from Marie Forleo, which many people who are listening will know who she is, and she runs B School and so forth. And she shares in different places part of her journey of how it was difficult, and she cried to her fiance and da-da-da, all this stuff. But I know for myself that many times when I heard that, I wasn't really listening to that bit. Mm-hmm. I was just listening to the success. So I was like, yeah, whatever, yep. And now she's a
millionaire. Just get to the success bit.
Yeah.
So get to the bit where you tell me how I become Oprah. Exactly. I don't want to know the rest of the stuff, but what was the magical thing that happened that took you from being in the bar to being Marie Forleo? Exactly. Tell me that bit.
Exactly. So
because the other stuff isn't sexy.
Even when it is being shared, it's not being heard, I think. Mm. Sorry, continue.
Yeah. Totally agree. And for me, I do try to share I really dive into this the shadow stuff because I find people resonate with that because it is where they're at. You know, I'm speaking to them where they're at, not as a guru who has overcome everything and now look at me shining on the hill and all the people that I've, you know, I don't know, not all the people that I've walked over to get there, but you know what I mean? Like I'm on top of the mountain now because, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know if the mountain exists anymore.
No, but I think there's a circle.
Yeah, exactly. So on the failure success thing, the thing that I've really been playing with recently is, and this came about because I actually posted, talking about the shadow stuff, I actually posted in my Facebook group, I'm thinking about doing a webinar about failure. Who wants to come on? And it was just so funny what it brought up in people, because some people were like, I don't focus on failure. I'd rather see you focus on success. And these are well-meaning people who really love me, you know, and they don't want to see me dwelling in failure. But I don't see it like that. I didn't see me talking about the real stuff being stuck in failure. Instead, I don't actually see failure as a bad thing anymore. I see it as learning and feedback. And this is the point that I wanted to make, right? We have success and we have failure. And for some reason, we think one is good being success and one is bad being failure. So failure is not good or bad, it just is. And success is not good or bad, it just is. And so I had this idea a little while ago, which was about a battery and how a battery has polarity. So it has, I'm not a scientist, so please pull me up if I'm wrong here, but it has a negative a positive. Awesome. So let's just pretend we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, okay.
So polarity, you know, hello, I know what I'm talking about. There's a negative and a positive charge on a battery. That does not mean that there's a bad end of the battery and a good end of the battery. There's just a charge. And it's
what
our attachment,
a great analogy,
that charge that causes us the pain.
And drives us and drives us and drives us to, because we're not looking for the positive and the negative. We're just like, give me more positive, give me more positive, give me more positive. If anything is negative, there must be a problem.
Yeah. Ooh. And avoid the negative, avoid the negative. I am not willing to look at it because what I focus, I create.
Yes.
And I don't buy into that.
But that's because the way that I hear you speaking about failure isn't from a place of collapsing, isn't from a place of disempowerment. And not everybody can do that, right? So the way you've just spoken to me about failure is from this place of enormous clarity, personal power, strength. Now, when you're in that place, it doesn't matter if you're talking about the Holocaust. It doesn't matter if you're talking about going to jail. It doesn't matter if you're talking about whatever. You know, there's something there that is hugely important to share with the world. But on the flip of that, you can be ostensibly talking about something positive, but you can be doing it from a place of disempowerment, and then you're actually doing less, you're putting out less value in the world than what you're speaking about. And I think this is where a lot of people get confused, because they hear law of attraction, they hear teachings around that, and they just hear it at the level of the words and not at the energetic resonance that
totally
goes with that. So beautiful, so beautiful. When you talk about being at the beach, something that I have tried to talk about for years, and I always feel, I never know if I quite nail it, so I want to go with you a little bit on this. I hear you talking about what I experienced for myself when I was sick, and I'll talk about that in a sec, of genuine surrender. And what I mean by that is I was sick for 4 years with chronic fatigue, and literally at the point of, I got to this point where I was just like, you know what? I have done every therapy. I have done every, you know, this, I've done every that, da, 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 da. And I give over now because I have nothing left. And I just was at complete peace with, I'm going to be sick for the rest of my life. That is just who I am now. And that's okay. And I came to this moment of huge peace with that. And now that I look back, that was the moment I started to get better. And to me, that is what surrender is. And that is what I hear you talk about at the beach. But sometimes people get confused with the word surrender and with giving up. So I wonder if you can talk to the difference there, or what you perceive to be the difference.
Yeah. So surrender is a really difficult concept to embody, because we talk about it all the time. And in my entire life, there's probably only been less than a handful of times when I've actually been able to do it.
Yes.
You know, like it's
well,
not something that you just
go.
Well,
the ego will not allow you to surrender with ease. It just won't.
No.
It's not interested in that at all.
No. So, yeah. So the surrender thing, I think giving up is totally different, right? Giving up is just like wiping your hands of it. It's I'm done in a different way. It's I'm done. This is over.
And where sometimes surrender, there's a bit of anger in there.
There's lots of anger. There's generally anger, resentment, bitterness, jealousy, all that stuff is wrapped up in the finalized, I'm done giving up version. For me, surrender is more just handing it over. So giving up on the how things have to unfold. You know what? Surrender to me is acceptance. It's acceptance of what is. It's coming to a place where you understand that regardless of what happens, you will be okay.
Yeah. And you already are.
We're giving up. Exactly. You already are. We're giving up is giving up, quitting. It's the same thing, but it's done with a different energy. It's done with a much harsher energy than a surrender is.
I think that's exactly it. I think the acceptance is the key to it because I don't think you are in a place of acceptance when you give up. I think you're in a place of rejection of the circumstances and you're just like, I can't actually handle the pain of these circumstances anymore.
Yeah. I think you can have a little bit of that in you when you get to the point of surrender too.
I agree.
Because there is part of you where you get to that point because you're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
More? Are you serious? I thought I was at rock bottom. Yeah. And now you're throwing this at me? You know? So there is an element of, there's still an element of it, but the release is different, I think. You know? It's the release that is different.
That is a great realization that it's actually, it's what you do with it. So in yoga, there's this term svaha. And svaha means give it up to God, basically. And, you know, there's Christian versions of that and all sorts of things. And I think that's what surrender is. It's like the handing over to something else, like somebody, something, whatever. Just say, I am now recognizing the control is no longer, like my attempt to control this is being released from me.
Because
it's not working.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? Like it's the control thing. It really all comes down to the control thing. And, you know, part of the reason that I've only surrendered, I probably only surrendered once that time on the beach was probably it. Maybe twice when the Office Collective was really going south. But that was more of a I'm giving up than a surrender. I surrendered the need to control the situation for sure. That was a surrender too. It was definitely a surrender.
So let's go back to that. When you were talking about, you know, last year I was trying everything to get Radcasters to continue on the trajectory that it had started on and it wasn't working. And then I got to this point now where I'm like, well, it's still there, but I'm sort of gracefully just moving over here and giving it its space to, who knows, like, evolve as it will, or maybe it just needs time, or, you know, whatever. That's a very different thing to going, well, I hate it, I'm shutting it down. You know, it's just almost like refocusing your direction and, yeah, giving it the space. Is that the way you're experiencing that?
Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't that I hated Radcasters, but I did hate what it was doing to me in terms of what, you know, the responsibility that I took on, I hated that aspect of it. I never hated the business and it's an amazing course. Like, you know, I've had 150 odd people do it over the last 2 years and the people who have done it have found success. They're podcasting and they're loving it. And their podcasts sound really good. So, you know, I have this product here that works. And I think that was the thing that I found the most frustrating of it all, right? Like, here's a product that works and I've seen other people use it. But then for some reason, emotionally, I got all messed up in it and it put the handbrake on. So the really interesting thing is, while the last 6 months of Radcasters, I didn't really even have a single sale. And then since that time, I've had 10 people sign up.
Of course you
have. But here's the thing, right? And this is something that I really want to highlight, because after I had that moment where I walked on the beach and I gave it up, I had people contacting me, asking me kind of like they were at the same point, but they weren't, because they weren't handing it over.
This is very hard to, it's like that you can only share the experience of it.
Yeah.
But everybody has to get to their own point of that, don't they?
Version of it. Exactly. And so what I want to say is surrender doesn't work when you go, okay, that's it, I'm done, you take over, so that now I'm going to get 10 sales of my course that I haven't had a single sale of in 6 months. But yeah. That doesn't work. I tried that again and again and again. I've tried the bargaining.
That in the past too.
And the bargaining doesn't work. It has to be full surrender. And don't surrender because you think, you know, like don't surrender thinking that, oh, well, I'm going to surrender now so that now you can, you know what I'm saying, right? Like you can't surrender.
This is what the mind does. It goes, oh, great. Well, that's the key. Well, I'll just surrender. Surrender, yeah. Surrender, surrender. I'm surrendering.
When's it going to change? Yeah. It's not, because
it's your acceptance that something may never change and this is it.
Yeah.
Yes, it's useful to have had the experience to understand it. But I think that if people who are listening, if you don't feel, maybe you're listening to this and you're like, I'm not sure if I have surrendered, then they're the little tidbits around actually it's not a path to anything. It's just an end in and of itself. I'm just
absolutely
being and I've in said full to acceptance.
Yeah. And I've said to, you know, I've done Facebook Lives in my group and I've said, like, I would love to sell you a 12-step plan to surrendering, but I can't because you have to get to that place. And that sucks as much as it's magical, because it's like at one point in our lives, and it doesn't have to be that your business is failing or, you know, you're not getting the traction that you want that leads you to your knees. Anything can lead us to our knees, right? Birth is the ultimate act of surrender. And for me, I didn't manage. Well, I managed to surrender in a different sense, and I had a C-section, and so I didn't. You know, my body didn't surrender, but I surrendered. You know, I think like if you think you've never surrendered, I would like to maybe invite you to consider that perhaps you have surrendered. It's just not fresh in your mind.
Yeah. And that's true. There are levels or layers or different experiences of it, I guess. I mean, breakups really, I mean, huge. I've been through divorce. That was an enormous surrender for me. Birth, both of my children's births were lessons in surrender in different ways. I'm not sure, you know, whether I fully surrendered in either of those circumstances. But both of them ended up being, you know, having medical intervention that was not part of the picture that I had formed in my head. And so there was definite surrender in allowing that to be actually beautiful processes.
Yeah, totally.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, when those times are tough, because I know that from lots of things that I'm hearing in the online space, you know, there's a lot going on at the moment in the world, and there are a lot of women who will relate to your story of last year of, you know, I tried this and it didn't work, and then I tried this and it didn't work. What do you do when times are tough? Are there things that you do that either you focus on or you think about or techniques you use or whatever it is that keep you showing up? Not necessarily the things that keep you pushing forward, but the things that keep you getting back at the desk each day.
Yeah. So definitely I have some little tools that I use. And they're very, very simple. The first is I make my bed every day, regardless of if I want to. And I have done that for, what is it now, 18 months. Every single day I have made it. And I can tell you that some days I don't make it until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but it gets made. So that's one thing, because I feel like for me, that is a really small thing, but I had this story pretty much all of my life that I couldn't be consistent at anything. And so I found one thing to do that I could be consistent, and it became a non-negotiable. There is no negotiating. If I'm sick, I get out of my bed and I make it, and then I hop back into it, because I am that committed to myself.
I love it. Love it.
And, you know, that came about because a friend of mine had this really great analogy. Emily J. Rooney, she's the home alchemist. She had this great exercise that she used to do that was like a house. And so you had the foundations of the house, and, you know, and the foundations were the things, little self-care things that you can do, you know, to show yourself that you respect yourself. Because it's not necessarily about love. Love is a journey. Self-love is a journey, and it's a constant practice. Self-respect is a little easier. So for me, it was like making the bed was something that I do when I'm feeling really good, but that falls by the wayside when I'm feeling shit about myself. So it became the cornerstone of my day. Other things that I did was like just simple things like have a herbal tea. You know, when Mabel was, oh God, a terrible sleeper, you know, slept no more than 45 minutes for the first 15 months. And I had all kinds of things happen during that time, a trademark dispute, like just all this horrible stuff was going on. And I was sleep deprived. And, you know, you kind of can lose yourself in that first year of motherhood. And I had completely lost myself. I was an anxious mess. But just carving out time when I would put her to sleep, because I was so attached to her needing to sleep so I could get some work done, I would get her to sleep and I would not come to my computer first. I would go and make myself a cup of tea first.
Mm.
And just those little things, they don't have to be huge, but it's a commitment to yourself. They are huge.
Yeah, I really do think they're huge, because they say everything about where your values are, and they talk to the value of self. And
absolutely.
If you can't first honor self, how can you honor anything else or anyone else?
And, you know, as someone who has been through depression and anxiety a few times, you know, I remember being in therapy, in group therapy, and there was a guy there whose life was just a total mess. Well, we're all a total mess. But he was like, you know, just living in like a hoarder's kind of house, and the therapist was saying, you know, it's really important that you take your drugs, and he would forget to take his drugs all the time, and we were offering him suggestions, and we were like, you know, well, do you have a coffee every day? And he's like, well, yeah, of course I have a coffee every day. It's like, well, put the pills next to the coffee so that when you have the coffee, but when you're in that place where you deeply hate yourself, that simple act of kindness towards yourself just is sometimes not possible. Mm. And we can put all of these barriers up between us and the things that we could do for ourselves if we liked ourselves. But sometimes we don't. So for me, the bed thing was huge, because there was a point maybe 5 years prior where I had physically punched my reflection in the mirror and absolutely, undisputably hated myself. And the journey of the last, it's probably about 7 years since my first bout of depression, has been a slow and steady learning to know, like, and trust myself.
Mm. Isn't that interesting? Because of the reflection in business and, you know, marketing and know, liking, and trusting. And my goodness, it just makes me realize that in order to do that well, you have to have first done it to yourself. You have to have known yourself. But even to get to like and trust, to know oneself, is an enormous journey. And to be willing to see oneself completely as you are, not the glossed up version, not the super positive version, not on your best day version, but the whole of yourself, that is a gift that not many give themselves, which is why I love that you said, I'm going to do a webinar on failure, because speaking about these things, being open and transparent about these things is a gift you give to the world.
Yeah, and it comes through me knowing, liking, and trusting myself, you know. I am dedicated to this more than anything. And when I was walking on the beach that day and I was ready to give it all up, I was ready to give it all up, not me, because I like myself. And I have never been able to say that before now. I like myself. I think I'm a really good person. I think I have a good sense of humor. I think I'm kind and compassionate. I'm intelligent. And I have a lot to offer. And that hasn't always been the way I felt about myself.
No, but isn't it stunning when you can get to the point of that level of acceptance?
It is. And it doesn't come by hating on yourself.
No.
You know, it comes through awareness, constant. It's a practice.
And I love that it starts with making the bed. It's just
yeah.
something simple. And whether it's making the bed for you or it's, you know, making your breakfast every morning, that was a big one for me actually, was actually taking the time to have breakfast. And I remember I lived with my grandparents when I was 17, 18, and for a couple of years, and we would fight, my Nana and I, every day about breakfast, because she would insist that you nourish yourself first and then you go out into the world. And I, crazy person that I was at that age, would just be like, I don't have time for this, and this is ridiculous, and I don't even understand the importance of what she was trying to impart to me. And so I would, I wouldn't care for my body before I ran off and jumped on a train and went to university. And then, you know, I wouldn't even feed myself for the first 4 or 5 hours of the day. And now I look back on that and I think, my God, I was so, when I see the thread of lack of self-care that traced through from a young age and certainly into my thirties, it saddens me definitely. I still feel saddened that treatment was there, but I also feel deep compassion for myself, and I feel deep gratitude for the willingness to sit in the discomfort of that and then find what was underneath it, which was actually
absolutely
beautiful.
And I think that's a really important thing, right, too, because it's like wherever you are right now is okay.
Yeah.
You know, it was okay when I wasn't making the bed every day. It was even okay when I looked at myself in the mirror and punched my reflection. It was okay. It wasn't ideal, but it was okay. It was where I was at for all of the things that had happened to me till that point.
Mm.
And it was also a life-changing moment that then sent me on this trajectory of the last 7 or 8 years, you know, which now, due to that moment, I actually like myself. You know, so yeah, so we are always where we're meant to be. I think sometimes we can hear a story like mine, like, you know, I've overcome things, sure, and I'm in a good place now, sure, but that doesn't mean that where you are isn't where you're meant to be.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And this assumption that we know better than the vastness of the universe. And we have a better idea.
Oh, I'm so clever.
What success should look like and what the past should be and da, 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 da. And we know, whenever we look back in hindsight, we know that we've been taken care of, that actually far more creative ideas and solutions and paths and more fun than we could ever have imagined have been presented to us. And yet still we insist on narrowing the future instead of broadening the future. It's quite surprising and strange. But I wanted to just finish by asking you about, I want to leave people with a sense of how we as women actually shine as business owners, because I think that we're so good at beating up on ourselves. We're so good at seeing the flaws. And this is something that I think that is not just about entrepreneurs. I was talking to a girlfriend the other day who works in HR for a company. She was sharing that when she interviews men and women, the position, the difference is so stark. It's absurd where the men walk in and they're super, super confident and they, you know, they're already promoting themselves three jobs ahead of what they're going for. And the women are trying to prove themselves. So I think it's, you know, it's across the board for various reasons. And so what I am interested in doing more of in the future is talking about actually what are our skills and our natural things that we do as women that we underrate, but which are hugely, hugely valuable as business owners, as human beings, as leaders in the world.
Oh, that's a huge question. I think we're more magnetic than we think we are.
I agree.
And, you know, for me, part of the issue with the whole Ragcasters thing was that I was trying to prove my value over and over and over again, convince people, overcome their objections, you know, be very masculine in my approach. In terms of, you know, my background, the one career that I did have was sales, and it was very, you know, very masculine industry. And so I'm used to sales in a way of, overcoming, getting the yes, overcoming objections, and constantly proving my worth. And I think sometimes we just need to really sink into the fact that we are magnetic beings, and a little femininity, or a little more embracing of feminine qualities like creativity, serves us much better than trying to push against our natural state. I think that we can have balance, because I don't think that we, I think that there's a balance that we can have. Again, just like the battery, masculine isn't a negative thing and feminine isn't a positive thing. It's just a different charge. So I think just embracing our natural ability to attract things to us without having to push. If something starts to feel like it's a push, then I think it's worth just looking at, you know, why does it feel that way? Why do you have to do it? I think, you know, I have a lot of friends who are entrepreneurs, and we all have different approaches. And I've tried the push and push and push thing, and it really wasn't working for me. And I tried to follow everyone else's formula, and I, you know, I tried all that stuff, and none of it really worked until I was just like, again, just in a place of acceptance and surrender. And perhaps they're feminine qualities. I don't know. And
they
perhaps they're the things that we need to be embracing more, is those feminine qualities, creation and surrender.
Mm. Completely.
And allowing, it just goes against, like, I mean, we've grown up in, I could talk about this forever, but, you know, we've grown up in this age where it is about providing value and, you know, I don't know, it is about that stuff. But it doesn't have to be, you know, we do have choice. So how could business look different for you if you let go of all of the things that you think you need to be doing and you should be doing to get where you want to go, and you just were like, okay, well, this is kind of where I want to go, and now let's do this together, universe, you know?
Because partnership is another feminine value. I think this is, yes, I love it so much. You know, I had this moment, I will never forget, I was at a yoga conference once, and the teacher, whomever it was, I can't remember now, was on stage, and she said, you must always remember that you magnetize and you radiate. The essence of your being is magnetizing and radiating. So be aware of what you're radiating, because that's going to tell you what you're magnetizing. And if you can drop into that as a business owner, and you can build a marketing strategy or a communication strategy or anything else that you want to, if you want to put the, you know, strategic elements on it around that awareness, then my God, it's just so much more powerful than this push, 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 push. And this is why people can get so turned off by marketing, because all they've felt is being pushed at, like all they have felt is people pushing toward them. And we make the mistake of thinking that's the way marketing needs to be. That's the way sales needs to be. And I think it's so beautiful that women are now questioning that and saying, actually, we can completely revolutionize the way all of this is done by tapping into our own inner wisdom.
Totally. Totally. And that just excites me. I've been watching like lots of documentaries at the moment about, ancient Egypt and how they were really into, they just had more respect for the role of femininity. And I just really look forward to, because I can see, I mean, we can all see the cracks in what has been the patriarchy occurring.
Ooh,
at
I
the
like
moment.
That. What has been great.
Yeah. And I really do feel that we're moving into a space, not necessarily where it's going to be all, all about the matriarchy, but I feel like there's room for both. You know, I feel like that just like the battery, there is a positive and a negative charge. It's the yin and the yang. It's the shadow and the light. It's the, you know, it's the polarity of life. And we live on one big, you know, center of polarity.
So well,
there
exactly.
is. There is going to be the shadow and the light, and there is going to be the feminine and the masculine. It's just that to this point we have resisted and not accepted nature.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I don't think we're moving into a matriarchy. I think we're moving into whatever the word is for a combination of
unity or something. I don't know. But yeah,
somebody can tell us what the word is.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a word.
Carly, you know we could talk for a long time. I so appreciate what you have shared. I so appreciate your willingness to show people the shadow, to be truthful about that. I think that that is one of the biggest gifts that anybody can give to the world is to say, I haven't got it all together either, and it's okay. Because that level of acceptance, when being able to be in that level of acceptance in yourself, just enables you to hold so many more people where they are. It's a stunning thing, and I really, really appreciate that about you. And I can't wait to read the book whenever the right timing is right. Let's not fall into
like
another.
There's three coming. We'll see.
I feel like that with book. I've got like books dancing around here.
Yeah,
I'm showing Carly, for those who can't see my hands, which is everybody. It's sort of dancing around my head, and I'm like, okay, I hear you. But I feel like my babies did that as well. So I was like, first of all, I went children first, and you know, and I could feel them playing around in the years prior to their birth, and now I feel the books.
Yeah, well, it's definitely all about the book for me at the moment, but that changes day to day, because you know, even though we come to this place of acceptance and surrender, it still doesn't mean that it's free of struggle, and you know, and it still doesn't mean that there's an absence of self-doubt or an absence of fear. It's just acceptance of all that is. And so during the process of writing this book, I'm experiencing all those things, but I just willingly accept them now instead of trying to deny their existence or avoid them. It just is what it is.
I think that is such a beautiful reminder to everybody, because otherwise the trap that people fall into is, I'll get to that point and everything will be perfect. Mm. And to know, actually, no, it's just that there's an underpinning, there's a holding, there's an essence in which everything then plays out, which is so much kinder and gentler and more loving.
Yeah. It's an allowing, you know, an allowing. And allowing doesn't discriminate. You know, it's not like you just allow good things.
Ooh,
allowing means allowing, you allow.
Allowing doesn't discriminate. So good. So good. Carly, thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
The end. Thanks for coming. See you next week. And in the meantime, I would love you to join my Show Up Speak Up community in Facebook or connect with me on Instagram at Carlosophies. Until next week, peace out.